Myself on my show, you know what I'm saying? So make sure we show love to everyone that's doing good. We see we got the brother King Keith Singh in the building, Mr. Keith Robinson. We're gonna be tapping in with the singer, actor, the former Power Ranger, the guy that's been on Fat Albert. Come on, been in Dream Girls, like
yes, yes, yes.
Could we just really, you know, make sure we start to cherish and appreciate when people leave good work on this earth? I think like a lot of times we don't necessarily get to celebrate these people while they're here. That's what Black Culture is the Breakdown is all about. All right, so let's give these people their roses while they're here. All right, so let's get into Mr. Keith Singh now. We're gonna ask him why he got that name, Keith Singh, but let's get him on here and let's get the show started. How we feeling, everybody? We go feeling good? Drop some comments below. How y'all feeling? I want to know how y'all feeling. Keith Singh needs to have the latest version of Instagram. Oh, Keith, they say you don't got the latest version of Instagram. Oh, we have a problem. Keith, try to call into the live, my brother, and see if we can get you on here. But it's telling me that you need to have the latest version. But what's going on, everybody? How we feeling? I see everybody in here. David saying, hey, Keith in the building. Keith is definitely in the building. Definitely about to be in the shmoney. Alright, we got what you call it. Who else is in here? Oh, Natalia Endless Dances in here. What up, Natalia? How we feeling?
Yes.
How we feeling? I see y'all all on here tapping in early. We're trying to get Keith on here right now. We got a lot to talk about, and there's a lot of gems that got to be dropped, and they doing them for free. We ain't charging tonight. But let's see if we can get Keith on here. Keith, my brother, if you're still on the live, let me know if you are able to send a request. Want to get you on here ASAP. How we all feeling, though, everybody? We feeling good? Boom, boom, boom. Yeah, Keith is telling me I'm unable to have you join because you don't have the newest version. So maybe you have to be able to upload that and come right back on so we can tap in. Okay, no problem. No problem.
Yes!
I understand. So there's a little bit. What's up, Germany? I see Germany's in the building. Yo, I want you to drop right now where y'all are from. All right? I'm in New York right now. New York! But I am from Jersey originally, all right? As a matter of fact, they call me Jersey. All right, the only.
Yes.
Make sure you know that and catch that when you see it. All right. What up, everybody that's on this live right now? We have a lot to talk about, and we're talking about Dream World to Dream Girl. You know what I'm saying? And we are definitely tapping into people that kind of took everything from Dream World and then basically got them into a Dream Girl or got them a Dream Girl. You want to know how that's a gotcha gotcha? Let me tell you why. Mr. Keith Robinson starred in and was Oscar nominated for his work in Dreamgirls, all right?
Yes!
Clap it up for that, because that's an accomplishment. Now we have Mr. TJ Jackson that's going to be coming on later on. By the way, TJ Jackson is son of Tito Jackson, nephew of Michael Jackson.
Yes!
And member of the group 3T. So make sure y'all understand and really tap into what's really going to go down tonight. But it's literally going to be epic. And we're talking history in the making, as a matter of fact. This is big for Black Culture to break down. We in the shmoney. All right? So it's going down. All right? I see there's a lot of people in here from early. Let me see. Drew Lucia Woods. What's up? TJ is definitely going to be in the building in a second. But first, we got to get Mr. Keith Robinson on the live. What up, Quan? I see Quan is in here. TW, I can never understand these names, how to pronounce them. I'm waiting for Mr. TJ Jackson. He'll be on here.
Yes.
He surely will. He comes on at a certain time, though. You have to stay the whole show so you can catch the whole interview. You know it's about to go down. All right. Let's see. I see the one in Andrea. Alabama's in the house. What up, Alabama?
Yes.
How we feeling? Georgina 118 says, waiting for Mr. TJ Jackson. So am I, okay? We're gonna
be yes.
First, we have Mr. Keith Robinson that will be stepping in the building first. We got Juicelia Woods, ATL in the building. What up, ATL?
Yes.
Georgia in the building. We got New York in the building. We got VA in the building. We got California in the house. New York is in the house. Nobody from Jersey on here. What's good with that? But we gotta make sure we keep the conversation rolling. All right, listen, I want you guys to make sure, I'm going to say this before we even get the conversation even started. Let's really remember black excellence for real. I want us to really know that without our contribution, let's be honest here, okay?
Yes.
I'm talking straight facts. Without our contribution to what black culture is, there would be no black culture. There would be no culture. As a matter of fact, they rip off everything we do.
Yes.
So I want you guys to literally be grateful and cherish these artists, these actors, these musicians that has come before us and put down great work. Come on, Michael Jackson, the Jacksons, Janet, LaToya, Rebe. Come on. The list goes on. TJ, Tito. Like, the Jacksons are a dynamic entity in its whole. You know what I'm saying? Oh, I see Keith Robinson's back in the building.
Yes.
Keith, let's see if we can get you on here. I'm glad y'all are on here early, and we are getting the party started. Keith, it's saying that you are unable to join. You do not have the newest version of Instagram. Are you able to call me? You call me on here. You call into the live and see if that's able to accept me or accept you. Everybody say what up to Keith. Keith in the building. He's saying that he's having trouble requesting me. I know why he's having trouble requesting me, because it's saying that you don't have the newest version of Instagram, okay? So we have to get that together immediately.
Yes!
Are we able to go ahead and upload the newest version and then see if you can come back on here? Instagram is very annoying. This happened to me before with someone that I've had on the show previously. Instagram, why you gotta do this? Don't want us to be great?
No!
We're not gonna have it today, okay? We're not gonna have it. So at the end of the day, we're gonna figure this out. Let's try this again. So funny. Technology is hilarious. Technology is hilarious. But we're going to get Keith on here. Keith sings, we'll need the latest version of Instagram to join. That is what it's saying. So you're going to definitely need, yep. Let me update. I'm on standby. I am on standby. Okay?
Yes.
And in the meantime, that's going to just be able to entertain y'all. As a matter of fact, let's actually have a conversation. Let's talk real quick. Let's play this game called Levels. All right? Levels means I'm going to pick someone that we have had a career in the industry that we are not necessarily sure of if, you know, we rank them as superstar, iconic, or legendary. That's the highest. So it starts as superstar, it becomes iconic, and then it's legendary. So I'm going to name some artists, and I need you guys to let me know where do they fall in that line. Superstar means that they're obviously a star, they've made it, and they got some kind of recognition.
Yes.
Iconic means that they've passed superstar status and now they are in the stratosphere. They've left enough on this earth to be iconic.
Yes.
When you are legendary, that means that you are literally cemented as king or queen or a king or a god in what you do. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Literally a legendary. So let's play this game real quick. Let's start with Jamie Foxx. What do we think about Jamie Foxx? Is he a superstar? Is he iconic or is he legendary? I want to hear what y'all got to say. Keith Simmons is calling in. It's time to get the party started, everybody. It's time to get the party started. But I want to hear what y'all think about Jamie Foxx. Is he legendary, iconic, or superstar? We got our first caller.
What up? Hey.
There we go.
What's up, man?
Welcome to Black Culture The Breakdown, Mr. Keith Robinson. How we feeling?
I'm feeling good, man. I didn't know I had to upgrade. You put me up on something. I just had to upgrade my IG.
It's all good, man. But you know what? Now you're going to be able to do Instagram live interviews for the rest of the year with no problems.
Yeah.
Man, welcome to Black Culture The Breakdown, man. I'm so happy. because you've had such a dope career, and I wanted to just be able to spotlight that and tap into everything that you've been able to accomplish just as a black man out here hustling.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, so let's get into the conversation early, man. How did you get into the game?
Well, I came in the game through music. I was in college at the University of Georgia. I got in an R&B group, and we ended up signing a record deal and left school early. And we jumped in the game full force and toured around Atlanta. And then we eventually got out of the deal. It wasn't such a great record deal as all first deals are. And we moved out to L.A. to kind of re-sign. And out there, I ended up falling into the acting world as well. So the band broke up, and I kind of kept hustling. And, you know, the rest is history. I'm still here.
Still here, man. And you still got some ways to go, too.
Yes.
Still here, man. Man, so let's kind of, like, get into it. What was your first big role?
My first big role was Power Rangers. I mean, that was my first role. My first job was I was a Lightspeed Rescue Power Ranger, man, which was now about 21 years ago, man, 1999.
Absolutely insane.
Maybe 22. Is that 21 or 22? It's been a minute.
It's definitely been a minute. First of all, we got to clap it up for a Black Power Ranger. We have to do that, number one. This is Black Culture to Break Down, and it wouldn't be right if we haven't had someone that is literally like a cultural phenomenon. You know what I'm saying? Like, no matter what, you're going to be cemented just off of that role alone in history as a cultural phenomenon. I don't know. Do you even understand, like, the magnitude of that?
I mean, I don't look at it like that, but it's Power Rangers is definitely one of those roles that you never escape from. So I embrace it, man. It's a blessing. It's a good thing. I was a part of a lot of people's childhood.
Definitely a part of a lot. He was a part of my childhood. I watched all of them. Mighty Morphin, Rescue. You know, like, I watched definitely growing up, changing into my Power Ranger. You know what I'm saying? Like, literally.
No doubt.
So it's definitely quite an interesting thing. I'm going to say this. As a kid, I never understood, though, you know, because it was black people were the minority on shows like that, right? Never understood, like, wow, how was someone able to get on a show like that? You know, so for a role like Power Rangers that is like super selective, I'm almost positive of that. How were you able to play that role?
I mean, I have no control over it, man. That was a straight blessing. I just went in on an audition. I didn't have a headshot. I had no real previous acting experience. And they just kind of liked me for, I think they liked that fact that I was just kind of raw in myself. Mm-hmm. And there was, you know, what you see is what you get type thing. And, you know, it was a blessing. Like, they chose me and you know, I ran with it. I was like, all right, cool, let's do it. So
definitely.
It was one of the things.
It is, man, and it's kind of propelled you to do so much more. You've accomplished so much in your career. But before we get off of that, how was it being one of the only black stars on Power Ranger? How was that experience?
It was fun, man, because I didn't have any expectations. You know, I was just really trying to pay my third of the rent, to be honest with you. That's where I was at with it. Mm-hmm. And pay for studio time. I was in a band. So it was fun. I mean, it was like you grow up as a kid, you know, acting like you're a superhero, so to actually get paid for it and for people to see it and fight aliens. I mean, it was a tough job physically. It was grueling. It was a good way to cut your teeth in Hollywood because it was, we shot like over 50 episodes in about 6 months, so it was a heavy workload. But, you know, I didn't realize how historic it was actually when I was doing it until I got away from it. So it was all positive, man. It was a good way to start off and get into business.
Definitely a good way, man. So let's jump into pretty much what the next question is now. Like, you've done so much in this career, man. You had what, Fat Albert, the Power Rangers, Dream Girls. You've done a lot of major roles, not to even mention the roles at short films, independent projects that you've done. You know, what is it that would you say out of all those things are the highest paying job? Doing a movie, a show, what would you say is the highest paying job out of all those?
Highest paying, like money wise?
Yes.
I think network TV is probably, I mean, unless you're like a huge movie star, you know, and you're getting millions of dollars for one role. But, you know, I think being on a steady network show pays pretty handsomely because it's steady. And you're getting paid per episode. So, but I
Definitely.
mean, that question is really varies. It really matters of where you are in the food chain, because some can command a higher quote than others. So it really depends on where you're at.
So now, when you got into the game, like you kind of on like some raw stuff right now. I feel the energy 100%.
Yes.
You didn't have like a manager and a publicist, and you
No.
didn't all of that in the beginning. You kind of just kind of was like, "Yo, this is who I am," and you just kind of got a role.
Yeah, I just kind of walked in there, man. I went to an acting class, and the teacher told me to go read for the role. And when I went in, I didn't even have a headshot. I didn't know what a headshot was. So I got a disposable camera and 1 hour photo, developed some pictures of me outside of my apartment building,
Gotcha.
and just went back in. And I think that played in my favor, because everybody else was, super prepared and knew the lingo, and I was coming straight out of music, so I didn't really. I was just trying, really just taking the gamble, letting it lead me wherever. So I think that played in my favor. So the manager and the agent and all that stuff came after the fact.
So now, for someone that's listening on the live right now that want to break into acting, what advice, because everybody has different ways, different methods. What advice would you, or what blueprint would you lay down in 30 seconds or less of the cultural appropriate way to kind of get into acting?
I think first you got to enroll in a class, study the craft, try to get in the class, try to do as many local plays and stuff like that. And really, depending on what city you're in, I think eventually you're going to have to move to a city. Or actually, I take that back about moving, because everything is so viral now, because you can audition from anywhere. But I think you should take some classes, definitely, and study your craft and network, and try to find a way to survive in between. If you have to get another job or whatever, then that's. It's no shame in that, but I think the key is really studying the craft and getting good at your craft, and then networking, trying to create opportunities to meet agents, to get in plays, to get your reel up, to get some
Yes.
stuff on tape that where people can see what you do. And then once you get an agent and they start pitching you for auditions, that's when you go to work. You really get good at scene work. So really, it comes down to studying and being open to network and kind of right place, right time type thing, and being it for the long haul. Don't give yourself a deadline, because if you're trying to hit a deadline, then 9 times out of 10 the game will wait you out. So if you're in it for the long haul, then sooner or later it'll break for you.
So pretty much you're saying consistency and just kind of sticking to it is
100%.
in addition to just being 100% prepared and meeting the right person and at the right time. Okay, so y'all heard how it is basically one in a million chances, all
Yes.
right? Now, man, you've done even so much singing. Word on the street is you was a singer before you was an actor. You was, you know what I'm saying? So talk to us about your musical journey. We came into your track actually not too long ago called Love Language, which I feel like is a whole but tell us about your singing journey, man.
Yeah, I mean, that's where it started. I was in high school. I got in a group. We were kind of like the Diet Jodeci version of the South. We did all the talent shows. That was my first taste of really the business. I went off to college and got in a group. We got a deal with Motown. We signed with the concert promoter, Al Haymon, at the time. And music is where it starts and ends with me. I mean, I've been doing music ever since. Every show, a movie that I've been in, I've always tried to pitch my music and get songs in them. And I've been successful in a few of the projects. And that's my love. That's where I kind of, my creative steam comes from songwriting and performing in that way. And I kind of bring that to every scene I do. Every scene has a rhythm, and I think songs have an element of drama. So I kind of combine the two. I think one craft feeds the other.
Yes.
I put out an album a couple of years ago called Love Episodic, which is out right now. Love Language is out, and Love Language the remix is out. I sing on the show Saints and Sinners. I got a song this season, and I got a new single coming called Kama Sutra that I'm excited about. Be out May the 7th. The video is crazy, and I'm gonna put out Love Episodic 2 this summer. So I'm always gonna be singing and songwriting as long as God allow me to. So they go hand in hand with me. I hope I never have to choose.
Come, well, we about to play a game. Pick one to save your life. If you had to pick acting or singing to save your life, which one are you picking?
Well, of course, I'll probably have to pick singing.
Okay.
You know? Okay.
Got you, man. The comments is going crazy. They say Motown. Wow, you're an amazing singer, amazing voice. They playing the hands up. Gee, so everybody's is 100% on board with you singing for the rest of your life, my brother.
Yeah.
Cool. That's good. I'll take that vote of confidence.
Definitely. But David Lloyd just commented, said you're an amazing actor, though. So you know we're not going to take that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Bro. Definitely. And, Georgina said, great choice, Keith. Now, sure. When you did Dreamgirls, you got to talk about that role. When you did did you understand the magnitude of what that role before you actually went and started filming?
I knew it was big. We all kind of knew it was big because it had been on Broadway for 25 years. So it was a huge Broadway play. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, sweetheart, Melissa. But I think the further we get away from it, the more of a classic it becomes. So it's kind of a thing when you're in something, you don't necessarily look down or stop. You just do the work. But we knew it was big. Did we know it was legendary and stuff like that? We knew it, but you don't really understand that until the further you get away from it. God. So that's one of those things that kind of get it ages with time. It gets better. As far as the legendary status of that particular movie.
Come, well, man, from Jennifer Hudson to Beyonce, Eddie Murphy, on Keith Robinson was in that movie, right? Now, were you all like, all right, we are in here with some heavy hitters. Was that air, was it in the atmosphere?
Yeah, but everybody was really respectable of each other's talents. I think so. It was a level of humility in, among all of us, because you know everybody knew that if you were there, you were in the room, then you deserved to be there. So I think it was. I mean, everybody had large camps and entourages, but I mean the actual artists themselves. It was a pretty humble environment, at least for me. I mean, everybody was cool. Beyonce was gracious and sweet, and Jennifer was great. She was really the new one as far as acting. That this was our first gig, and you know she was super humble to the process, and Jamie was just like one of the homies, so everybody was cool. Eddie was a little he was a little off to the side. He didn't really mix and mingle too much during the in-between times, but you know when he came time to work, he was great. So I think you know everybody was just really, it was a big deal for everybody, I think, who was involved.
Man, that movie is a big deal to the culture. First away from it, the more bigger it actually seems. I guess important it becomes. It's really strange, but I guess that's how they say something is supposed to age, like wine, you know what I'm saying, and not like milk. So that's definitely a blessing. Now, you did a track that was Oscar nominated, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now, it's a different stratospheres of being recognized now. To be Oscar nominated, you know, for your work that you did in Dreamgirls, and Beyonce was on the track, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Actually, the track that Beyonce's song was nominated, Listen. Jennifer had a song called Love You, I Do, and then I had a song called Patience that I performed with Anika Noni Rose, and Eddie Murphy was on there as well, and that was the one. So it was three songs that were nominated, and we all kind of, you know, we all performed on them in various ways, so.
Yeah. And so you guys didn't end up taking that. You guys didn't end up taking that win.
It was only four categories. We canceled each other out, I think. And Melissa Etheridge won for the movie Cars, believe it or not.
Now, let me also ask you this. How do you feel about, because you're in the Grammys, you know, the Oscars. Do you feel like it's a political and maybe a contrived situation that's inauthentic? Does it feel inauthentic to you?
Some of it does. I mean, I don't think there's no way around it. It's such a huge opinion-based institution. So there's going to be opinions, and there's going to be some level of politics that come into play. I think it's pretty out there now. So I think that both are trying to do a better job of making it, of leveling the playing field. But yeah, I think positioning helps a lot, you know, name and momentum come into play a lot when it comes to those big award shows and stuff. So yeah, but I mean, to win, to be invited, to be nominated is still an honor, and it's still a prestigious benchmark in your career. So as an artist, you definitely want to do that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, do you feel like if you don't get recognized by the Academy or I guess by the Grammys, would that be like a, is that like a deal breaker for you, or are you now past that?
Well, it's not a deal breaker. I mean, it'd be a great thing, but I mean, that's not gonna stop me from being a creative, whether I get recognized by them. I mean, I would love to be recognized by them, but whether I do or not, that's up to the powers that be,
Well, I definitely feel like you're gonna be someone that is gonna probably prove a lot of people wrong, my brother. You are gonna definitely walk away with a Grammy or that Oscar, or speak that into existence for all of these, and that Emmy and the Tony and
I'm
everything.
claiming that. I'm claiming all of that. I take all of
We claiming all of that. We claiming all of
that.
that. So now let's talk about, do you feel like you get your just due in this business? You've been in this game. You said it 21 years is your first role on Power Rangers, and now you're 21 through a pandemic, you're on the show right now, right? Do you feel like you get your just due in this business?
I don't know, but I don't know about just do. I mean, I try not to get caught up in that. Because I'm grateful to be able to doing something I love, but I mean, do I know I'm definitely underrated. I know that. That's a fact. I think that people haven't really seen me in all of my essence. They've seen me in segments and bits and parts. So I just keep working for the right opportunities so that I can showcase the full body of work that I had that I possess. So I think people are still haven't really seen me. Believe it or not, that might be sound crazy because I've been around, I've been in a lot of projects, but I always have that sense of I haven't shown my whole self yet, so I'm definitely priming to for those opportunities.
Definitely. You're still in loading mode, man. You're still loading up. But man, 20 years, 21 years, whatever how many years it's been, you've accomplished a whole lot. First, come on, Power Dream,
Thanks, man.
It's Christmas, Fat Albert, the list goes on. And it's still growing. And so I definitely, you've done enough in our eyes on Black culture to break down to be recognized. And that's why we got you on here today. And so they're roses while they're here, and that's
Thank
100%.
you, butterflies and lace.
Definitely. We have a few questions before I get the next segment on, but let's see if we can take a few. David Lloyd says, as an actor, which role did you feel the most connected with? That's an excellent question.
The core for most connected. I did a show called Over There, which is about the war in Iraq, and I played this cat named Angel, who was a sniper who really was conflicted of with him carrying out his duties as a soldier and upholding his religious beliefs, having to kill people. So I like that role a lot because it was very layered. And as an actor, you always look for roles where a person is layered and you can kind of really play in between that. So that might have been one of my most connected roles to date, for sure.
Definitely. All right, dope, dope. All right, so if I haven't checked out that one, what's it called again?
It's called Over There. It was the one season we did on FX. So we did 13 eps. It was in and out. It was a while back. I actually did it right before Dreamgirls.
Okay.
And yeah, it was one of those roles that I wish could have extended a little bit longer.
Well, make sure y'all go check out that over there. Could they find that anywhere,
Thank
or
you, thank you.
that's not nowhere to be seen?
Yeah, you can look it up on any Amazon or any place where you can, look up television shows. It's there. You know what I mean?
Got you. It's always like the artists, everywhere, the roles that I guess people feel the most connected with are the ones that really make the light of day, and the ones that they like.
Exactly.
Man, is the one that every it's so funny that
That's how it is usually, man. The ones that you really gravitate towards a lot of times don't see the light of day like that. But that's just how it is. Same for an album. You might have favorite song that you write that you just personally love, but the crowd might gravitate towards that pop hit, that single,
definitely. So let me close it out with this, man. What advice would you give about acting? But what advice would you give to young black men that are in the music industry right now? I feel like the music industry is hurting a lot. You know, we lost a lot of greats from Pop Smoke to King Vine to even this year, next. You know, so I feel like we're losing a lot.
I would say, you know, overall, don't give yourself a deadline when you're supposed to make it. Don't get caught up in comparison. Fight your hardest to stay authentic, because it's easy to take the bait and try to be like everybody else, and then you end up like everybody else. So be in it for the right reasons, and just continue to get better at your craft while you wait, you know what I mean? Because the opportunity presents itself. You just got to be in it with all your soul and all your effort, and just try to be authentic, try to be different. It's okay to be different and go against the grain, because that's what people remember.
Absolutely, that's 100% facts. Man, you are excellent. Thank you for coming on and just feeding our audience. And man, they're going crazy for you in here. They saying, you better say that, Keith. They saying, yes, rest in peace, X. Absolutely, rest in peace, X.
Rest in peace, DMX, 100%.
100%, man. They like, I like Life Journey, Life's Journey. Okay. Great.
Yeah.
Bill's in the house for you. The Keith Singh fan page saying really good, you know what I'm saying? They out here for you, man. So
what's up?
Again, appreciate you coming on Black Culture to break down. And I hope it's strange. And anytime you got something going on, please feel free to come on here and shit with us, bro.
I will, man. I'll shoot you the new single, Kama Sutra, May 7th. And stay tuned in the Saints and Sinners. Thank everybody for watching. The premiere came on tonight at 9 o'clock. I think it's on the West Coast right now. So season 5, thank everybody for the love and support, man.
Absolutely, man. All right, well, appreciate that, Keith Robinson, everybody.
Peace. Stay up, man. In a minute.
Brother.
Later. All right, man. Holla.
So that was Keith Robinson, everybody. Come on, man.
Yes.
He was dropping gems and he was doing them for free. Okay? I need you guys to tap in and really get this edumacation, because it's for free. And these are about people that have actually accomplished what it is that you're trying to do. Let's actually, again, let's really cherish and acknowledge greatness. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's been a part of Dreamgirls. Who ain't never seen Dreamgirls? Okay, everybody's seen Dreamgirls, okay? Who ever seen Power Rangers? Come on. If you got kids, you've seen the Power Rangers, okay? Everybody's seen, I've seen Power Rangers, you've seen Power Rangers, your kids seen Power Rangers, your brother's seen Power Rangers. We all seen Power Rangers. But who are these people that are behind these characters? Let's make sure we pay respect to the people that's done it before us. You know what I'm saying? All right, let's get Mr. TJ Jackson on the live and let's get this conversation pumped up. All right, how are we feeling about it from the Black Culture? About to get TJ Jackson. Oh, there we go.
Yeah. What is going on?
Going on, Mr. TJ Jackson?
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm excellent. I had a great day today. Got to chill with my family and do some family things, and now I'm relaxing for the night.
Now you're relaxing for the night. Well, welcome to Black Culture, the Breakdown.
I'm happy to be here, man.
Well, we're happy to have you, bro.
Yes!
So, man, Black Culture, the Breakdown, it's all about tapping with people that we find to be excellent at what they do, and just tapping into the culture movers and the culture makers, the culture shakers, and just really understand how it is that you got to where you're at, and how can we level up the culture that we're there.
I love it.
Let's get the conversation rolling. So,
yes,
man, if you guys don't know who TJ Jackson is, I'm going to do a quick introduction. He is son of Tito Jackson, nephew of Michael Jackson. Okay, make sure you understand that. Then on top of that, he's a part of a group called 3T. All right, make sure you understand that.
Yes.
Now, does it stop there? He does a lot of directing. He's a songwriter. He's a singer. There's a whole bunch of different stuff. So we got you on the show right now because we want to hear how you got started in that situation. Take us back to the beginning.
Oh, I can't even remember the true beginning because I was so young. You know, growing up in the Jackson family, you know, you got my father and all the brothers and you know, my aunts, and you see them do their thing on stage, and you're bound to get excited and want to do exactly what they're doing. You see how they're changing people's emotions in a way that most people aren't. So, you know, as a young boy growing up around that, you know, it seemed like we were at concerts every other weekend or every other week. and you just want to be that. So my brothers and I, we started rehearsing like we were the Jacksons, or you know, Earth, Wind & Fire or Kool & the Gang. We thought we were them after seeing their show. And, you know, my father one day was like, this is all cool. I could see you guys are enjoying this, but you guys got to do your own songs. You know, you got to write your own music. And, you know, we started doing that, you know, with my father's guidance and my mother's, you know, support and my Uncle Michael's support. We continue to do it and to grow. And you know, here I am decades later, still doing my music and loving it.
Still doing it, man. Absolutely. But so now, you wanted to do music from Jump Street. So let me ask you, did you feel like you were low-key pressured into it because of the type of family that you already had?
You know, it's funny because when I used to get that question, I would always say no. And the reason why is because I grew up playing baseball. And that was my passion. That was my love. I thought I was going to the major leagues. But no family member ever said, you have to do this, or it'd be great if you did this. But the reason why I first said, you know, I used to say no, is because now I think there may have been some pressure from myself, you know, like inner pressure to do what you feel like you were put on this earth to do. You know, I'm not saying we were great as youngsters, but we still, when we started doing our little shows and stuff, we could see us making some type of ripple or effect on the audience. So, and this was when I was probably 9 years old. So I knew from then that it was something it felt like I was supposed to be doing, but never did the pressure, never was the pressure tangible, if that makes sense. I never, you know, we were never in a meeting saying, when are you guys going to release that? It was never like that. So I guess the answer is no, but maybe for myself.
Maybe for yourself. I'm gonna, even though this question may be a little premature, but I wanna ask you now because we're on this topic. Do you feel like you wish you would have had more pressure to kind of be able to get that more tenacity? Do you feel like they were more hard on you? You wish that?
I don't. I really don't, you know, because I could see why I would want to, or why the question, you're asking the question, but I think, you know, I think, as I said, one of the most popular questions, I swear it felt like with 3T, we got this question every time was, do you feel pressure? Do you feel pressure? And we always answered no, because we didn't, you know, and I think if our parents or our family turned up the heat a bit, it could have made us feel pressure. And I don't really think you can perform at your best or be your best when you're feeling a certain, you know, too much pressure.
Yes.
And now that I'm older, I understand the Jackson legacy, you know, and people say, hey, what do you mean you now understand it? How did you not know it then? It's because my family was so humble, you know, and it wasn't till I would be, you know, at my child's at a dinner for my child, and you hear the next table talking about Heartbreak Hotel or a song of the Jacksons or one of my family members that wasn't a single, and that you realize, oh, it's just more than just pop culture. Some people are living and breathing what my family's accomplished. And that's when I start realizing, oh, maybe I do need to turn it up. Maybe I do need to add to this in a certain high level. So I'm getting it more. I'm feeling more as I get older. But when I was younger, I didn't. And I think that was the healthiest way for us to be 3T.
So it kind of gave you the opportunity to kind of form your own opinion and your own love for
yeah.
the craft that you were developing.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, there's not that many people who follow in their parents' footsteps. And I don't want to put, you know, talk about anyone's kids or anything, but if you think about it, there's so many, you know, you got a sport like basketball, which everyone seems to play, you know, here in America. If you're a black kid, you're usually playing basketball, or at least rec, you know, and you got to imagine there's not that many professional basketball players who have kids that make it at such a high level. And I think it's a lot because of the pressure, the eyeballs, you know, when that kid any big celebrity, any big legend, NBA legend, when their kid steps on the court, you know, they are hearing, that's that kid, you know, and that it's hard to perform day in and day out with that pressure. We didn't really hear or feel that, you know, and I don't know if it's because our family protected us from that, but we were able to escape that. And I think that's why we were able to carry on with that kind of confidence, naive confidence, you know, going through those growing pains to get better. I think that was the reason why we were able to get through that period and to break it out and do our career. So I think pressure is a good thing. But I think in certain situations, when your family is well known in that field that you want to be in, you got to be very careful with the pressure because it could break your spirit.
Well, listen, TJ Jackson dropping gems. I'm for free tonight. All right. So make sure y'all listen to that. Too much pressure is not always the way to go because it could
just
break. All right. So let's bring it back. Now, I'm a creative director and a choreographer. And one of my biggest inspiration as a dancer is Michael Jackson. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's just a given. Did you ever do a lot of dancing? I don't really recall you guys dancing too much. Okay, no. All
right. No, I'm going to tell you why. Well, there's two answers to the story. I remember, again, going back to the pressure, I remember, you know, going to birthday parties and dances, you know, school dances and dancing and enjoying it, you know, and I wasn't a bad dancer. I was in it, you know. And then when I hit like eighth grade, you got people saying, do the moonwalk or do the spin or do the lean, you know, whatever it was. And that just stopped my will to dance, you know, because I felt, oh, they want me to do what my Uncle Michael can do, and I can't do it like my Uncle Michael can do it, so I'm just going to quit and stop now, you know? So we didn't dance so much, and again, back to the pressure, I think that was a perfect example. Now, on the second half, we remember perfectly well, I think it was 93, right around there, 1993, we were with my uncle, for the Danger Short, maybe 91. People, some fans out here are probably killing me for me not knowing the date. But for my uncle's Danger Tour, the Asia leg. So we went with him in Japan and Taiwan and Singapore and saw him perform to stadiums. And, you know, before, you know, we'd be in the concert, amazed by all the people around, you know, the stadium was packed and they knew every word of my uncle's song, even though they spoke different languages. They knew every word, and, you know, so impactful for us to see as kids, to see our uncle just kill it, you know? And, you know, at the end of the show, you know, maybe the last song, security would tell us it's time to go. So we go in the backstage and we hear the music real loud because we're now close to the stage. You know, we hear the stage moving. We hear all of that, you know, and we'd wait in the car because my Uncle Michael was finishing. He was going to get in the car and we were going to split out before, you know, the crowd started. The traffic to get out. So we'd be waiting for him. We'd be waiting for him. He'd come in the car, you know, singing his last thing and saying, good night, I love you. You know, doing all that while he's in the car. So we're leaving. And then he'd turn off the mic, you know, when it was over, you hear the band playing and finishing up. And he'd go, you guys don't ever dance. It's exactly what, that was the first thing he would always tell us. He would say, don't dance, don't do it. And he just looked worn out. And he's like, if I don't give 110% every night, I'll never hear the end of it. They won't like it. It won't be a good enough for them. And, you know, even with the moonwalk, he said, I cannot, even if I didn't want to do a moonwalk, people want me to do this. And he's like, you better just don't dance, play your instrument, just work the stage, but don't go crazy with it. And I don't know if he was halfway serious or halfway joking. But that stuck with us, you know. We were like, okay, we'll do our movements, but in terms of the crazy dancing, we'll listen to Uncle Michael.
Definitely, man. That was well. We gotta clap for that story. That story was epic. I was right there with you guys, and I heard when he said, "Don't dance." I felt it. As a dancer, it is what it is. You know, I go everywhere and they're like, dude, I'm like, oh my God, when you've been dancing all day, nobody wants to go around and do a spin, right? But
And here's another thing real quick. You got to remember, he was a perfectionist. He was someone that you could be a good dancer and he'd call you all right. You know, he would say, he's okay. He's doing this wrong or that wrong. And then you'd look at it, he's like, dang, he could be doing that better. So I think he was also just coming from a real high level of dancing ability. And I don't think he wanted us to chase that because it would be like a forever chase that would put pressure on, if that clarifies.
Absolutely. And you're dancing, you're not able to just do that to your highest of capacity at a certain age. Dancers are athletes. So after a while, your body starts to not be able anymore. So let me also ask you this. In addition to just Michael being an excellent dancer, come on, you got Janet that can body the dance floor at any moment she feels like it. Your dad, Tito, the entire Jackson 5 are excellent dancers. So just putting Michael to the side here, your entire family knows how to move for the most part.
Yeah, you know, and I think that was just growing up the way they did. You know, that I think movement and especially as a band was important back then. You know, you had everyone from the Four Tops and the OJs and, you know, everyone was moving, you know, even if they weren't doing intricate dance moves, all of them weren't, they were still moving and grooving, you know, and I think that was just the generation they grew up in. Nowadays, you know, the generation I grew up in, it was a lot more standing, you know, it was Boys to Men. It was, you know, Shy, you know, I won't count New Edition because they're cut from the old school cloth where they're moving. But you know what I mean? There was a lot of groups, Jodeci, who weren't doing those kind of dance steps. They were just feeling it. And that's what we kind of grew up on. We grew up on all of it, but that was what was moving our generation, of course. So, you know, we kind of just followed in that wave. You know, always paying homage to the New Edition and the older groups, but we grew up on the Boys to Men and Jodeci and that kind of stuff.
Definitely, man. So that was another question I was going to ask you. What did you guys listen to other than your family as inspiration? Like, who was it that's like, yo,
everything.
He's dope.
Everything, everything. And I, when I came in this, this IG live, I heard your last question to Keith and I loved his answer about being authentic. And I was wondering what would I answer if you asked me that question? And I'm sorry if I'm spoiling your last question, but this is kind of the answer I would give is to listen to everything. You know, don't just listen. If you're into hip hop, don't just listen to hip hop. You know, listen to classical, listen to opera, listen to rock, listen to R&B, and study those greats. And then if you study it and understand it a bit, you can pull some of that inspiration into your style or what makes you you. And that's how you could become something completely different and unique. And, you know, that's something that our Uncle Michael taught us. He was really big into that. He would have all different types of music playing all different times, you know, and know it and understand it. And know why it was successful and explain that. So I think having a good worldview of all different types of, not only just music, but art, you know, being able to understand paintings and sculpture and understand what makes a great artist in those fields, you can always pull that into your own field of what you're trying to do. I forgot the original question. What was our inspiration? Musically, Motown. Everything from the Bee Gees, Paul Simon, New Edition. I always forget them to mention them for some reason. They are huge for us. Prince. Of course, our family from my Aunt Janet, Uncle Michael and the Jackson 5 and, you know, Uncle Jermaine, all of them, of course. Whitney. You know, I think the same, you know, Babyface, all the Babyface movement, that was huge for us growing up. So I think what's inspired everyone, but you know, we also listen to the Hall & Oates and you know, Phil Collins and Genesis and even the rock stuff we would listen to, because I think it was important to understand what is connecting with so many people.
Absolutely, absolutely. Man, I actually want to just talk about, we're going to jump ahead again, because you just mentioned all of those inspirations and your single Dream Girl. I feel like all those different influences from the rock and the R&B, and it just gives you a nice fusion. Talk to us about that single.
Dream Girl. You know, I've been getting into a new genre, at least I feel it's new, called lo-fi and chill hop. And it's just a really cool, you know, kind of urban swing, but it's chilled. And, you know, I told my producer I wanted to do maybe a project in this vein. And I sent him a playlist of some of these lo-fi chill hop songs I really liked. and asked them to make some tracks that I could maybe vibe to and maybe come up with melodies. And Dream Girl was one of those tracks that he built and I was able to live with and come up with a cool, you know, melody to match the vibe of the song. And yeah, it felt dreamy and I wanted to capture that in the words. So that's what it is. Dream Girl's about being in lust or strong lust or an absolute love. It's coming from a pure place, and it's coming from that feeling when you first are in a relationship and everything's perfect, and before you understand any problems or before any of that's even on in the presence. That's the vibe I wanted to capture, and that's what Dream Girl is.
Yeah. Man, can we actually play the track for like 30 seconds? Would you give us permission to do that?
Yes, please.
Out, man. Go ahead and introduce your track, my brother.
Cool, man. This is Dream Girl, my latest single from my upcoming project, MMM.
Okay, here we go, Dream Girl. Make sure y'all drop some fire emoji for the party. Hey, this is Dream Girls.
That's Dream Girl.
That's that Dream Girl. Man, make sure y'all go ahead and stream that on Spotify, Apple Music, right? And tell them where they can get it.
Exactly what you said. Apple Music, Spotify, Tidal, Amazon, YouTube, where all the streaming platforms you can get it.
Definitely, definitely. I was watching one of your latest music videos when you were in a white room and you were playing the guitar. Was that this track?
No, because I haven't shot the video for this one yet.
Now, what video was that one that had the rock influence that you were in a white studio and you guys were playing like rocking out with a whole bunch of instrumentals, a keyboardist,
Got you. You're talking about last night?
Yes, there we go.
Last night, yeah. Okay. Yeah, last night is a song I released, about a year. And it's actually part of my Pressure project. I have a project called Pressure, now that I think about it, that comes out, that continues to get delayed because of COVID, because I don't want to release it until I can go and promote it exactly how you said, with the band and performing and kind of bringing that old school feel. So I keep delaying it. But last night, that song snuck out kind of before COVID took over. But yeah, that's part of my musical vibe, and it's just, you know, old school influenced by my Uncle Michael, like the Off the Wall time period and the Earth, Wind and Fire. I want to bring some of that musicianship back, and last night's a kind of sneak peek of where that project is.
Dope.
Yes.
And the fans are in here commenting way before we even got it. Last night, please.
I bet my fans are amazing.
They're absolutely dope, and they definitely help us out when we don't necessarily know everything right away. Right.
Yes!
Thank you guys for getting that together. Last night is fire. You can't play it right this second, though, because we're going to jump back into this interview, because now I want to get into 3T. and everything that you were able to accomplish with your group that you're still a part of now with your brothers. What made you decide to be like, yo, let's just do 3T as the brother thing. Let's do it.
That's all we knew. You know, I think 3T started when I was 16 when 3T first released its first single publicly. But say again?
16?
16.
Okay.
16 when our first single came, when Anything came out. And I think it may have been 17. It may have been, you know, a month. You got me thinking because I think it was August and my birthday is July. Anyways, 16/17. But what people don't know is, you know, we've been 3T 9 years before that, since I was pretty much seven. I've been doing shows with my brothers, you know, on the drums and them on their instruments. And that's the only way at least for me, I guess I should only speak for myself, but that's the only way I wanted to come out was with my brothers. We felt like we were a team. And I think seeing, you know, the Victory Tour and the Jackson shows, you felt like they each had their own powers, and together, you know, they were unbeatable. You know, that's how we felt as young boys. And I kind of felt that, you know, I still, you know, this whole journey as a solo artist has been amazing. The studio has been great. You know, these kind of things is all good, but I'm still a little concerned about being on stage without my brothers, you know, and it's maybe because of my upbringing, because of what I saw and felt. But where am I saying? 3T will always be, they're my brothers. You know, it will always be part, a big part of who I am. And I look forward to getting back on stage with my bros.
Absolutely. So then for the record, 3T is still a group.
We will always be a group. We're brothers. There's
yes. You know,
we will always be a group. We're just taking a minute to do our own thing and to follow our own goals and dreams. And hopefully soon we'll get back together as 3T and do a wonderful project for our fans.
Absolutely. We'll be looking forward to that.
Yeah.
So then now jump into, you guys did the Jackson, the Next Generation.
Yeah.
As 3T, and you guys were able to kind of bring your families into it. We got to see like this personal side that we never got to really see from you guys. What made you guys do that show?
I think it was, you know, I again, I don't want to put what my brother's complete thoughts in. I can only speak for me, but I was a huge fan of Run's House. And I just loved, you know, I was a big, and I still am a huge fan of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and the Cosby shows. And I think it's important to see families project love and, you know, complicated things, but at the end of the day, it's family and love that brings you out of it. And we wanted to do a show that resembled that, you know, that showed we were real, that we were no different than others, that we had our issues and problems. And, but at the end of the day, it was family and love that made us pull through. And we just wanted to showcase that. And we are very proud of many of the episodes. I think it just got to a point where the network wanted a bit more salaciousness and a little bit more drama. And we never signed on for that. That wasn't the reason why we wanted to do the show in the first place. So we kept it at that first season. And, you know, we kept it at a strong collection of love and family. And you know, looking back, I don't regret it at all. But at the same time, I wish we would have known it would have went that way, or there would have been an intention to go that way. But, and the other thing I'll say is I'm loving the fact that in today's world, you could do your own show. Back then you couldn't, you know, YouTube wasn't as powerful and big as it is now. And my wife and I, we have our own family little, you know, channel that we do vlogs once a week that are 10 to 20 minutes. So we are doing that kind of vision I had about family and love and strength and happiness. We're doing that on our YouTube channel. So, you know, that's just important to me.
That bringing like cameras into your household, does your kids miss it, or are they like happy that it's gone and you didn't have to go through it no more? How is that feeling?
You know, I my kids never mentioned anything one way or the other. They never said, oh, they're excited to shoot, and they never said, oh, we have to. They are actually less shy than I was. I was shy. It was hard for me to talk in front of a camera. But my kids, they go. You know, once that light is on, they're ready to perform. So
they got the singing bug.
Some of them do. Some of them got the dancing bug. Some of them got the filmmaking bug. So, you know, or creating art from behind the camera. You know, I don't know what it is. I don't want them to feel any pressure, but I think there's just something about being a Jackson that kind of gravitates you to perform or to do art. And I'm not going to stop that. I'm always going to encourage their passions, whatever that is. And if one of them says they want to be just like their Uncle Michael, or just like their Aunt Janet, or just like their Grandpa Tito, I'm always going to support that. And I'm going to help them get to what their goals are.
Yes.
Dope, man. TJ Jackson is a stand-up guy, right? He's supporting his kids, whatever they want to do.
100%. 100.
That gem is free, and he's dropping it for free, okay? Ben's dropping it for free. Now, let's talk about, I guess, your extended kids, right? That's Paris, that's Prince, that's Blanket. When Michael passed, you were able to assume legal guardian over them. How was that experience kind of being like, wow, I have to now raise the king of pop? Despite him being your uncle, is still the king of pop's kids. How was that experience taking that on?
I never thought of it that way. I really didn't. I did understand that they were different in the sense that they would have different circumstances than most other kids, even more different circumstances than I had experienced. So I was conscious of the fact of who they were, but I never let that interfere with anything I thought or anything I wanted to tell them or teach them or guide them with. You know, I'm big on family, and as I've said, it's about love, being good people, respectful people, understanding you're going to make mistakes, but to learn from them. And, you know, I just also felt that my Uncle Michael was so, because I lost my mother at 16, and he was so instrumental of helping us not lose our ambition and not losing hope in life, that I always felt in debt to him. I always felt like I owed him. And I've said this many times, well, what can you buy Michael Jackson that he doesn't already have or know about? There's really nothing, you know? So when he passed, it felt right to step up and to do what I know he really cared about, and that's to help his kids become the best human beings they can. And, you know, fast forward, it's over 10 years, I couldn't be any more proud of my cousins and all they are and all they will be.
Yes.
And I truly love them like they're my own kids, and I'll do anything for them, and I'll always try to protect and guide them. I don't know. It's a unique situation. I even then with my uncle in the latter parts of his life, you know, when I'd speak to him, when he'd call, you know, my first question was, how are my cousins? You know, I didn't ask them about what music projects you got coming up or, you know, have you seen this movie? My first question was about my cousins, because I just knew that A, they were that important to him, and B, I cared for them because I knew their life would be difficult in a way, you know? So I don't know.
How did that actually come about? Because you guys are such a massive family. So how did it end up being that you were going to take all three of them?
Yeah, well, I don't want to say take all three, because that would be doing a complete disservice to my grandmother, who was the original guardian of my three cousins. She is an amazing person. I mean, you all know Grandma Catherine, but I could say, from my heart, she is the most beautiful person. And, you know, not just for my cousins, but for myself. Because like I said, when I lost my mother at 16, Grandma was huge for us. I had lost my other grandmother soon after losing my mother. So Grandma was the only maternal figure I had for most of my life now. And she's been that rock and that beautiful spirit that I think everyone needs, that loving light. And she's that way for my cousins and will always be that way. You know, the truth is she's up there in age. You know, she's now 91. And, you know, yeah, I believe it's 91. It's either 90 or 91. I believe it's 91. But, you know, and it's hard raising kids as it is for 30 and 40 year olds, you know. So it was one of those things where she would always ask me as the one with the kids, because I'm the eldest grandchild with a child. I had experience, and I used to talk to my uncle about parenting. So she knew all that and would always ask me to be around for doctor's appointments and school visits. And if she had to go out of town, she'd call me to come and stay with them. And then, you know, I became co-guardian with her and, you know, eventually just became kind of sole guardian. But I think it's very important to mention that without grandma, you know, my cousins really needed her and her love, and still do. And, you know, her love, it's like a force field around us. It's so important. I can't even explain it.
Wow, man.
Yes.
Just like while you're explaining that story, I'm imagining everything that's happening. And when you ask me where the kids are, I'm just like visualizing it as you're saying, because, you know, this doesn't really happen that we get to hear these personal stories about pop and someone is even as legendary as you, a member of 3T, all right?
Yes.
So, you know, so I almost feel like it's literally like giving an inside look on what you guys go through on a day to day. So now the kids are all grown up now. And they're kind of like doing their own. Paris is doing music. Prince is doing filming. So were you like, okay, I knew they were going to go this direction, or were you kind of completely shocked?
No, I wasn't shocked. And not surprised, actually. You know, even when my uncle was here, my cousins, you know, they were into film and acting and directing. And, you know, Paris, you know, got at least showcased that she wanted to be more music a while ago, you know, and just now she's releasing her stuff, and I'm so proud and happy for her, because I feel another thing is music is a very it's a very therapeutic, you know, and it's been huge for myself, and not just for my mother's passing, but for any hardships in my life, music's always been a very good outlet. So for me, I didn't really care what form of art, as long as they were able to find their art that they were passionate about. I think it's important. And even if they don't do it professionally, I just think the ability to say something or to sing something or to emotionalize something through your art is very important, especially important for if you went through a difficult time in your life. And I guess I got to mention, my brothers and I started a foundation in honor of our mother called the Dede Jackson Foundation, where we, you know, our primary thing is doing Music Hills classes. Again, it's for kids who are in difficult situations, broken homes and come from, you know, difficult, challenging environments. And our goal is to literally get them to write music, to help them deal with their situations through the music form. Because sometimes we get too shy to share what's going on in just words in a therapy session or on a talk. But we can be a lot more open if we're drawing a picture or singing or writing a poem. And that's something that we want to make sure everyone knows about, at least as many people as we can. We want to share that incredible tool that is art.
Absolutely. That's 100%. That's got to share that too. That's art. And I'm glad to see that it's staying in the family, and that we would ever lose the Jackson name, because you guys are going to just keep replicating, and generations are just going to keep going into music, and you guys are just never going to go anywhere. And we love that. So now, going into, we're losing so much of our greats, man. It's almost unfathomable, you know what I'm saying? Like, from DMX, that was just what, 2 days ago, 3 days ago? You know, Pop Smoke, King Von, that's just the hip hop on the hip hop scene. But Prince, a couple years ago, your Uncle Michael, it just, Whitney, I feel like in a 10 year span, we lost maybe like the greatest acts to ever earth. And it's kind of really a hard pill to swallow. What is just your overall thought on just our great going away a little bit quicker than expected?
It's sad, of course. You know, it's difficult. It's challenging, especially, you know, and not just in music. We lost Kobe last year. That and Chad Bozeman. Those are difficult losses for us, you know, and it's really difficult. I think the one thing we have to do is celebrate what they gave and what lessons they taught without knowing they taught us, and channel that energy and that inspiration to do the best we can at whatever we're going to do. You know, that's the only thing I think you can do is to celebrate who they were as people and who they were with as the best at what they did. You know, and still today I'll rock Prince just like, you know, I'll watch an old Laker great game, you know, where Kobe's lighting people up. I think it's important to remember them and to appreciate them, but to also use what they gave us as inspiration to be the best we can be.
Yes, 100% facts.
Yes!
100% facts. Super dope, man. I just feel like really a hard pill to swallow when you just know that you won't hear anything from them anymore, you know? And it's really difficult. Do you feel like there's anyone that can walk in any of those people's footsteps that we, do you feel like music, better question, do you feel like music is in a good space that we have icons in right now?
Okay, that's a great question. Okay, so let me answer this two different ways. In my opinion, there will never be another Michael Jackson. And I'm not just saying this as his nephew. And I'll say the same thing. There'll never be another James Brown. There'll never be another Prince. You know? And I think it's important to understand that. And that's why you should be going back in history and celebrating past legends. But with that said, I think we have to utilize what they learned and taught us to be the best us. And I think the key is to do your own thing. Like he said earlier, be yourself, be authentic. And if you do that with the ambition that they had, you can become a legend like them, you know? And I think that is the best route to take, is to find your own lane and find what feels right in your heart and go 100% at that. And see what happens.
Listen, TJ Jackson's dropping gems and he's doing it for free tonight. Okay. If you're an artist and you're tapping in, he's giving you some gems. Now, who are you listening to right now? Like, who do you feel like has the potential? Any artist that you feel like, you know what, maybe never be a Michael or a Whitney or a Prince or this James Brown. But do you feel like there's someone in our stratosphere right now that has the potential to kind of live up to any of those names?
Yeah, I do. I think Beyonce, you know,
okay.
I think she is in that category to me. And again, there's influences of from Beyonce of maybe my aunt or uncle, but she still got her own thing, you know. And you could tell she looked up to them, but she made it hers. And I tip my hat off to that. I think The Weeknd is brilliant. You know, he may not move like Michael. But, you know, he seems more comfortable with his own thing and he's killing it, you know. And I think that's the key is to not be afraid to take from your inspiration, but to make sure you find your own lane and to find your own way that feels right for you when you do your thing. I think those two names, there may be another that I'm missing, but those two names are pretty powerful to me.
How about Chris Brown? No Chris Brown.
Chris, great. Chris is another. He's amazing. And you know, I haven't heard much of his recent stuff, and I love to hear more stuff. But Chris has it. You know, and Chris can do what Chris ever.
Let's have a real conversation in regards to legacy and being legendary and iconic, however you want to call it. What are the main characteristics that you have to embody to get to that status? Because I do think Chris Brown is excellent at what he does. But for whatever reason, Michael Jackson's still here, and I feel like no one else is nowhere close because they don't necessarily have the work ethic, the mystique, all of the things that come with it. Thing that they need in order to reach that stardom?
That's a great question. It's just such a difficult answer, because if that answer was so easy, we'd see more, you know. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to take away from what anyone does. I think for my Uncle Michael, I just think it was a perfect marriage of being, you know, a child prodigy from the Jackson 5. You got to remember, the Jackson 5 on their own are in the Hall of Fame. You know, their first four singles went straight to number one on the pop charts, you know, and that doesn't happen every day with anyone. And to know that it was my Uncle Michael's amazing voice and persona that was a big part of that success, that is something that helped, I think, propel him to a legendary level before he was 19. And then, you know, when he's doing Off the Wall and you know, doing his thing with Thriller, that made it out of reach, in my opinion. I hate saying that because I feel so braggadocious, but it's just the truth. My uncle, you know, forget what he did as an adult. There's a whole child incredible achievements that support his position of where he's at. Again, I feel so terrible, but I think he just also understood a lot. He was a sponge at a young age. You know, he was never into the sports. He was never into a lot of things, you know, that could be distracting for kids. He wanted to be a legend at 10, 11 years old. And he projected himself that way. And when you're doing that, that's something you can't really teach, you know, and he never lost that motivation to continue to grow and to continue to stretch his abilities and to achieve. And I think that history of just greatness is why it's going to be hard for someone to catch him.
Wow, and that's beautifully said, and I think it's right on target. Just as a cultural connoisseur, I just feel like it is important to just be excellent at what you do, number one.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of people don't reach that greatness in music or in dancing and visuals. It doesn't necessarily happen like that, but there are a few people like the Chris Browns that do achieve somewhat of like success in that realm. But then there's the other part of just being a human being that people just love, that they don't necessarily access. So there's always connect with one or the other. Michael was able to accomplish all of them.
But real quick, again, I think his situation helped him a lot, you know, because he had the Jacksons and they had their own cereal and their own cartoon. So my uncle, you know, with the Jacksons was able to really change. They were part of a movement, if that makes sense, you know, and I think that's been a huge, tailwind? Is that what it would be? Tailwind? Yeah, to help propel him to the level that, you know, and then my Aunt Janet, you know, and this is something that my Uncle Jermaine always told us, and I don't think I've ever shared this, so this is cool to share. He always felt like we were part of a team. You know, like you know, or like a wrestling match. It's like, you know, when you tag someone, it's your turn to go represent. And then it's, you know, and then after you do your thing, it's a tag. I remember clearly if my Uncle Michael had a huge song on the radio, and then my Janet, and then another family member had it, he loved that. My Uncle Jermaine was he was happy, you know, and I think that's helped our entire family as being part of the Jacksons. Same thing with 3T, you know, same thing. You know, there's wonderful pictures of my Uncle Michael and my Aunt Janet wearing 3T hats, and that helps, you know, and it just makes it kind of a brand. And that's all something that we've been able to have that the Chris Browns haven't been able to have. So I don't want to knock them or penalize them for that, because we just were lucky to have a family behind it.
Absolutely. That's a great perspective that maybe someone, because, you know, a lot of people like to just talk online based off of what they just assume. But then there really is a whole other side to listening to why things are the way they are. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's interesting to listen to that. Thank you for that perspective. Real quick, Miss Britney Spears. I feel like as someone that's a pop princess, we'll call her, she's not necessarily a pop queen, but I do think that she was she was on her way to kind of going close to, you know, achieving greatness in that statue. I'm not gonna say close to Michael Jackson, but achieving greatness in that way. What do you think about her documentary that just dropped and everything that's happening with her?
I'll be completely honest with you. I haven't seen it, and I don't know too much about that. Coming from who I am, I know how documentaries can paint any picture they want on someone. So I technically don't usually put much weight into documentaries unless it's a creative one from the artist. But I haven't seen 1 minute of the Britney Spears one. I just hope that herself and her family is doing well. I personally don't know this, but I just from experience, I can strongly assume it's better than what's projected, and there's more love and control, if that makes sense, than what it may project. The media has a way of wanting to project chaos because it's a way of spreading news and getting eyeballs, and exactly of getting paid. And I don't know what the truth or not is. I just always want to suggest to people to be cautious and to be careful what they say. But yes, Britney, you know, she again had her own little, you know, with NSYNC and Backstreet Boys, that whole kind of movement. Again, that when you have that movement and that support around you, it can help propel you to an extra level. But yes, she had her music and songs and was doing her whole thing. She had a great combination of a great public image with dancing and singing. And that's a powerful combination in music, especially when you're gonna have a big label supporting you the way they supported her.
Definitely. You're talking about documentaries. Now let's go into just Leaving Neverland real quick and just about mm-hmm. how could that happen. And now it seems like so long ago and so much has transpired since. But when that doc hit, it was such world breaking news. And I actually saw on Sway that one of the accusers actually dated your cousin. You know, so, and he was a dancer, you know, so it was almost like kind of like clout chasing ish. They're agreeing to why documentaries shouldn't be as, you know, it's not everything that you see. What are your thoughts on that?
I hated the, I did see that one. And I don't even like to call it a documentary. I call it a film, a movie. And it bothers me, to be honest, because, you know, not just from what all the facts to disprove what they alleged, it's the fact that there's a personal knowledge of the people, you know, and if anyone knew how much, you know, how much they, after my uncle passed, how much Wade wanted to be at his funeral, you know, the fact that he wanted to have his wedding at Neverland, as a older adult, the fact that that's just all ignored and passed by not only the documentary, the film, which you'd expect, but also from the media, again, just shows there's no real intention to come to the truth. It's all about getting eyeballs and making it as salacious and gossip worthy. There are, you know, many solid documentaries that answer questions people will have or may have. Square One is one of them that I still haven't seen, but my brother seen it and said it was wonderful. You have to dig a bit more, again, because it's not as salacious, but that is one. And then my brother's working on one, another. But I think you just have to look into the motives of people, you know, who are going to make allegations. I'm not one to ever want to ignore the voices of those who are abused or who are wronged. But at the same time, you have to be a true person with a good background and a character of integrity before you just slander someone. there's financial motives that have been happening backdoor that they've requested for, and if this doesn't happen, then this is going to happen. There's stuff like that that happens that the world doesn't know about, and the media doesn't really care. So just be careful, you know, because especially going forward, anyone's going to be able to say whatever they want about people, and our society's moving so fast that the fact checking is going to be almost absent. So just be careful as a viewer to make sure you are second guessing some serious allegations.
So usually your family's so private and so quiet. And just even the fact that I even have you on here is such a major thing. Everybody, let's just shout out to TJ Jackson for being on Black Culture, the Breakdown right now. You guys are super private. Do you almost feel like I have to stand up and defend my family? Because it's kind of like slanderous, or not even my family, my uncle, you know what I'm saying? Because it's slanderous, even through his death, they still try to paint a narrative and just try to make money for someone that's not here to even defend themselves. Do you feel like you're like the protector of your family or your uncle?
I will always, you know, try to show how my uncle was and who he was. You know, I love him with all my heart. He was so important in my life. I will always cherish him and always think of him with a huge smile. It's hard because it could become a full-time job to defend my uncle. You know, it seems like every day there's some type of something said or some kind of wrongdoing, not only from my uncle, but maybe other family members. And it's hard to, because it can get very tiring. It could be very emotionally draining, always fighting. So I wouldn't necessarily call me the savior. I would actually probably give that title to my eldest brother, Taj, who was very passionate about defending my family and my uncle. So I applaud who he is and what he does. For me, I just don't have that same stamina that Taj has, if that makes sense. But I love my family, love my uncle, and you know, I've come to the conclusion that the world will say what they want to say and do what they want to do. But I know who he was. His fans know who he was, and that to me, that's what really matters.
That's absolutely what matters.
Yes.
And at the end of the day, if you're a real MJ fan, you already know when something just doesn't sound right.
Nope.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So they support you guys 100%. Man, let's close it all out with just name that group, all right?
If Mike great.
Janet was to be in a group, what would that group be called?
Okay, you cut out. If who?
If Michael and Janet were to do a group, what would that group be called?
Oh.
He's like, oh.
No, you know, I almost said.
Comment below if you guys have an idea.
What yeah, you guys I would love to hear what everyone else says. I have a name in my head, but I don't want to reveal anything. And it's not like it's a great name, but it's what came to my mind. That's another question I've never been asked. I don't know. I feel like a two-word thing would be it, you know? They would have some cool name. I think Jackson could be one with an X, J-A-X-O-N. I could see something like that. I'll just stay with that. You know, I think Jackson would be a sweet name for that kind of combination.
Someone said MJJ.
There you go. See, but MJJ is my uncle's initials, so and that was his, you know, he's known as that. So although I love that name, I don't know if that would fly because the MJ community would be like, no, that's already Michael. We got to go somewhere else.
That's so funny. Now, let me also ask you this. Are you guys like super competitive with each other on how you guys perform on a solo level? Now, you guys are all connected and you guys are all supportive of each other. But now when it's kind of like, all right, it's time for me to be in the studio. My album's about to drop. My visuals got to be A1. Are you looking at the charts, the numbers? Do you guys compete with that, compare? Mm-hmm. How do you guys feel?
It's for me, it's changed over time. You know, I think I was very, I would watch the charts. I would study them. I would look at them. You know, I would ask my Uncle Michael ideas. You know, my brothers and I, we'd pick his brain. We'd ask him a lot of questions. Today, I don't really care about the charts. I don't. I do it from my heart, my passion. I am still driven to do the absolute best art I can, but I don't know if I have the desire to chase charts and positions and awards. That is a completely different game. That's not, you know, awards aren't equated to skill or to art beauty or art greatness. 100%. It's so unfortunate. A perfect example is how The Weeknd doesn't get any Grammy nominations for After Hours, which to me was one of the great R&B albums, recent R&B albums of the last decade or so. How it doesn't get one nomination and Blinding Light has been in the top 10 for over a year just tells you that there's some questionable things that get, you know, questionable decisions in these award panels. So again, it took me time to get there, but I don't put my energy there because I feel like it's putting it in the wrong space. I put all my energy into my art and to doing things that my fan and community want me to do and want to experience. And so far it's been very pleasing.
Why is the industry like that? And I agree completely.
I think it's money.
There's so many great artists that get overlooked. And I'm like, how are they this good and no one pays attention to them and the label pumps all this money into people that... Go ahead, tell us.
I think it's a combination of money and just straight up politics. You know, if it, for example, you know, anything, and again, I'm not saying this for bragging. I'm just saying because it's my experience. But our first single, Anything, I remembered it was number one on the radio in San Francisco for like a month and a half, number one on the pop charts, and same with LA. But there were some big cities that would not play it. They would not play anything unless the label would give a free trip to Neverland to the radio station to use as like, you know, be the 19th caller and win a trip to. That was the only way they would play our music. Things like that. I'm not kidding. Things like that happen all the time. So like we could be killing it in one level, but you know, like the neighboring city or another big city wouldn't even give it a chance because they want something out of it. That when I was young, I could deal with. It was an ugly side of the business, but it was part of the business. Today, I got no time for that. You know, I don't have any energy. I just don't have time for that. And I'd rather not even play that game. I want to just, and the beautiful thing is in 2021, they're losing their power. You know, all these radio stations, they're losing their power with every single day. And it's a beautiful thing because it's leveling the playing field. It's giving people who could be found on YouTube, because we have all these social media outlets from TikTok to Instagram to YouTube, where someone, an artist out there, can release something and it can go viral for whatever reasons it's supposed to go viral. If it's a fun dance, it's a cool dance, it'll go viral for that dance. If it's for a great song, it'll go viral for a great song. That wasn't the case 20 years ago. But now that is the case and it's a beautiful thing. And that's the game I'm going to invest in. That's the game I want to play. I want to make music that's going viral because it's great music, not because, you know, the Grammy says, you know, I do X, Y, and Z for the Grammy board or for this radio station, and they're going to play it for that reason.
Yes! 100% facts. I just interviewed Rough Ends a couple of days ago, and they had that song, No More Shopping Sprees, No More, back in the day. And it went, went number one for a lot of weeks, but it was their only track. It was their first debut single in 20 years. Have never been able to reach that again, right? Now, how does that happen? That's like, you know, you have a career that, and it's just like you go number one, and I guess they want you to replicate that every single time.
Yeah.
You know, the machine does, and then you're not able to. How does that interfere with your creative process? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, is that a downing?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of factors in that. Sometimes, and I don't want to speak for them, but sometimes for any artist, if a song gets incredibly popular, a lot more popular than their catalog, we as consumers and the label want them to just replicate that sound because it's worked. It's like a risk reward. They know they don't have to risk a lot to maybe get a huge reward. So that's what they want. So that's what they're going to push. And a lot of things can happen. It may be hard to replicate that. It may not be the passion that the artist wants to do. You know, it may be something that it was a special thing the producers had a part of. And now, because it was such a big hit, they want to charge $200K for the next track. And, you know, you can't get the negotiations right. And then, you know, you finally do, but it's moved on. You know, it's changed. The sounds have changed. So there's so many factors that could come to play that it's hard to say what was the reason for any artist. But it's a crazy game that is the industry. And again, I think that's why what Keith said in the last question he asked was so big. Be yourself, because if you're authentic and you have a song or something that connects with people, it'll be much easier to replicate it because it's you. You know, you're not having to figure out another formula. You're just being you. And I think that is brilliant advice, and the same thing I would tell any artist out there or any, you know, anybody who's wanting to do something that's great. Be you, get your influences from the world, but be you and go 100%.
Be you and go 100%.
Yes!
I love that. I'm going to put it on my Twitter.
Yes.
and I'm going to make sure I quote you, all right?
I love it.
And credit is a no-no, okay?
Nope.
I'm sure that we don't do that. TJ Jackson, you were an amazing guest on Black Culture to Breakdown. I could sit here and talk to you forever, but I know you have a family that you have to get back to. And you're crazy. They're going crazy in here as we speak. What's up, Algin? I see you're in here, bro. You know what I'm saying? And they're going crazy as we speak. But leave us with one last memory, your fondest memory of Michael Jackson.
Again, there are so many. I think my fondest memory, it changes, I swear, every day.
Well, how about this? The best advice that Michael has ever given you.
Okay. And actually, I think I just answered the fondest memory in my YouTube channel. I did a live Q&A. So if you want that answer, I guess you can go there.
Yeah, okay.
There's a plug for you. Okay, the best advice from Uncle Michael. To give back and to represent the world, represent positivity, to give people hope, to understand the power that is music, don't take advantage of that power. I think that's been the best advice. I've had, you know, people say I need to be more hard, or I need to do, you know, talk about this or that. And I hear my uncle saying, you know, be good, be right, do right. And that's something that I will always live by and try to be, is to bring positivity, happiness, and love to this world. So I would say that's the best advice that I've gotten from him, and one that I will always live by.
Wow, definitely.
Yeah,
I think that's something that we're all going to take with us too, and just be a good person in this world. You never know when your last day is going to be.
That's right.
Major influence. So for artists out there, be very, very responsible with your voice and with your words and your lyrics, because it can change somebody's mood from down to up or up to down. You know what I'm saying?
It will change someone's mood. It will. Yeah. For any artists out there, I don't care how bad you may actually be. Just you saying your truth and you going for it and putting it out there, it will find the person it needs to find to touch and to inspire and to bring positive vibes to. I truly believe that, you know, and I think, I'm sorry to cut you off. I just want to say that I think we as people like to connect with others, and sometimes through music, it's the best way to connect. I get many messages from people saying how my music helps them get through bad moments and you know, can help them do this and that. That is the best, that is better than any reward I've ever received. And that is a powerful, powerful thing and something I'll always cherish. So for any artist out there, ignore the hate, do you, and touch people's lives, and you will.
Wow. Yes! Y'all heard it, TJ Jackson did that. And he ain't even charged y'all, okay? He ain't even charged me. All right, so you guys, make sure y'all take that. This is Black Culture The Breakdown, and we have TJ Jackson on here giving us everything that we ever asked for. How to break into the industry, stories of Michael Jackson, 3T beginning, you know what I'm saying, and still continuing, the Jackson family, all these stories. Thank you so much, man, for just
coming. Yeah, man. Thank you. Thank you. It was fun. I had a good time.
I had a great time too. Is there anything that you want to plug before you go? Anything we should be on the lookout for?
No, I got my MMM project. It's really three words, but I call it MMM for now until I reveal what those words are. But I'm trying to do my own thing and musically making sure it's the best it can be and to do a visual project with it. So again, you could follow me on here on Instagram at TJJackson9. But also my website, it's a great place to look into anything I'm up to from my videos on. And that's just www.tjjackson.com.
Absolutely. Make sure y'all go do that.
Yeah.
TJJackson.com, man, you were excellent.
Thank you.
I have you come back on again. Whenever you got something new, please come on and talk to us. On
you Black got Black. It.
We here to support you, bro.
You got it, man. Thank you so much and be blessed, okay?
Be blessed. TJ Jackson, everybody.
All right.
So that was TJ Jackson. And he definitely broke everything down to us, y'all. Yo, he dropped some gems. And he gave us some inside scoop on how Michael lived with him and he raised his kids. Yo, that was crazy. You know what I'm saying? Like, Michael Jackson is one of the greatest artists to ever walk this earth.
Yes.
And we gotta make sure we recognize people for the greatness that they do, for real. TJ Jackson is a vessel of that, you know what I'm saying? He has Michael reminiscence and Michael ambiance about him, and that's why he's dope. But again, y'all, I am your boy Jersey. Thank y'all so much for tuning in to Black Culture The Breakdown. Follow me. I'm here every Sunday at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Yes!
Okay, you can follow me. It's free. I don't charge for that. All right, and we do these interviews. Next week, we got somebody dope. I got Kirk from Floribama Shore and a few other surprise guests coming on, so make sure y'all tap in next week, 10:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm out. Deuces.